Welcome to the fourth episode of the Manero Pop Podcast. My name is José Manuel Simián, and here with me is, as usual, Marcelo Weiss.
Hello, José.
Marcelo, we made it. People say this wouldn't last, and here we are, fourth episode.
Exactly, yeah. It's like that time Michael Jackson told Lisa Marie, remember? In the
they say it wouldn't last when they kissed.
It wouldn't last, and you know.
One of the most disgusting kisses on television.
And then it didn't last.
Then it didn't last, of course. I mean, I always say that they say it wouldn't last. I say it to my wife.
I don't know.
Anyway, we're here.
Maybe they said that to Don Francisco, and you know.
It lasted 53 years, and here we are, as you have rightly said, to talk about the end of Sábado Gigante.
No one ever saw it coming, right? I mean, it's like he must have sold his soul to the devil, and we just, you know, figured it'd be on TV forever and ever.
And you know what? I think in every episode of the podcast I've said, I find myself talking about Chile more than I want to. And here I am talking about Don Francisco, who is Chilean. But
you know, I think it definitely merits it. I mean, it's a show that started in Chile before it was ever, you know, brought over to America or to Univision. I mean, I was reading that he shopped it around to, you know, basically every country in South America. Like the bigger, you know, like Mexico and Puerto Rico.
Well, that's interesting. So let's recap a bit. So Sábado Gigante, record-breaking show, the longest-lasting, I think, variety show in the history of television by the Guinness Book of World Records, started in 1962 in Chile. This guy is interesting that Mario Kreuzberger, the Francisco real name, was basically a nobody. He really wanted to do television, and he pushed and pushed until they put him on TV. And you know, there's an interesting story. People didn't like him, apparently. I don't know if people or the TV station wasn't convinced, and so they put him off air. And then he gathered all his friends and asked them to call incessantly to the TV station, saying they wanted that funny guy, the chubby guy back on TV, yada, yada. And then
it happened.
He got his way, yes. And then the show lasted in Chile for a long time. Don Francisco became super powerful. He started the telethon. And then eventually he moved the show to Miami, to Univision, which is what you're making reference to.
And then back then it wasn't called Sábado Gigante, right? It was called... Sábados Gigantes. But I think there was another one, right? I mean, right before that one, I think it was called...
The show originally started on a Sunday. I'm 99% sure of that. But more importantly, when I was a kid growing up in Chile, the show lasted, if I recall correctly, 6 straight hours. It started around 2 p.m. and lasted until the evening news started at 8 p.m. And it was a live show. And then he would do Noche de Gigantes, which was a talk show, like David Letterman style.
You said there was a break, right? Like an hour news break. And then
an hour. And I don't know if parts of that were taped. I can't really remember. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think he had like about 80% of the ratings. In that, and then I remember people sitting and watching the whole thing because, you know, Chile used to be still kind of boring. Don't kill me for saying that. But I mean, this is the Pinochet years that I'm talking about. The show started in the 60s, but I was, you know, a kid in the 70s and 80s, and there was not much else on television or anywhere else to do.
So, yeah, it was all about watching Don Francisco for hours.
Jumping forward, I think it's interesting to talk about what it became because we're here not to talk about Chilean television, but to talk about Sábado Gigante and Don Francisco as the most important figure maybe in Latino television in the United States and the Spanish language world of the United States.
I think, you know, and then reading throughout these articles, it's interesting to note that he produced the whole thing, right? I mean, he actually had a hold on every creative aspect of the show. It wasn't like Univision had any sort of input. Like, he basically, you know, he produced the show, and then he sold it, right, to Univision. Is that right?
And according to what I read in one of these reports about the show's cancellation, that wasn't one of the reasons of its eventual demise, because they needed to negotiate directly with him,
right,
and cut a deal directly with him. So I read there were two reasons for his cancellation. One was decrease in ratings in the key demographic of young adults. And then there was this thing that it was expensive, and it was expensive to buy it directly from an external production. Yeah. But there have been talks. I mean, I understand that Univision had been looking for a way to cancel the show for a few years now.
Or modernize it, maybe. Right. I read that they were trying to groom some new guy to take over Don Francisco's place in case, whatever, you know, like in case, I mean, because he was planning to bring his daughter along, right? That was also
Vivi, yes.
Yes.
Which he did in Chile. For a while, she hosted the show.
We talked about how, was it a
or
different...
Or co-hosted, I'm not completely sure.
So was it a different version of the show? Like where, like Chile got, you know, the Don Francisca version of the show, and then the U.S. got the Don Francisco, or was it...
I would lie to you if I... Yeah. I mean, I consider myself qualified to have this conversation about the History of Gigante because as a kid, I watched a lot of it, and I loved it. And I worshipped Don Francisco. I thought it was awesome until I started thinking it wasn't.
Yeah, I was reading this thing about how, let's see, grooming Venezuelan comic Raul Gonzalez, but last year Gonzalez defected to rival network Telemundo. Now the network is developing its Saturday night variety show that could be announced as early as next month. And this is to, you know, cite off, was it the Guardian article? No, it was the LA Times article that recently...
Mm-hmm.
They recently published their Don Francisco obituary, basically. Interesting, though, that Telemundo's like jumping on the on the opportunity, you know, to, you know, maybe, I mean, if according to this, you know, to come up with maybe like their own version of a Sábado Gigante, you know, on their network with this new guy that, you know, had been
groomed
to become the next Don Francisco. I mean, that's a fly move on behalf of Telemundo, we'll have to say.
And I think just before we jump into that, I think our main topic of conversation, which is why we think of it, or the cultural significance of Don Sábado Gigante and Don Francisco within the Latino world and Latino pop culture, I wanted to mention that we, on Manera, we published this article by Joel Marino, one of our writers, and it's titled Don Francisco and Me. And I like it because it's an interesting perspective on what the show meant to him as an immigrant. He came from Argentina to the States, and it played sort of different roles in his life. At first, he was a foreigner and in Florida, and he couldn't speak English, and Sábado Gigante meant sort of home to him. He could watch it and understand it, and it didn't feel weird. And I think this is how many, many people came to the show and came to love the show. And then as he assimilated into the culture, he felt embarrassed that he was associated with that part of the Latino world, Latino culture. And then he became like this embarrassing uncle who's making like jokes that are offensive or embarrassing, and you just want to be a cool kid. And then eventually he sort of reconciled with it as part of his history and maybe he came to terms with Sábado Gigante as being part of his life. Well, this is like a sort of kitsch, campy part of Latino culture that is also a part of me, but I'm not necessarily that.
Yeah, it's a great timeline, I think, and one that probably most people that, you know, did assimilate and did, you know, when you can finally see it from outside and you're like, oh, wait, there's a lot of crazy stuff going on this show that's not necessarily PC. It's PC to us, you know, because in Latin America you're used to some crazy stuff or, you know, certain things fly out there that wouldn't fly out here, just, you know, as we'll probably, you know, get into the sexism and, you know, the awful jokes, making fun of minorities, that sort of thing. But yes, you know, I think his hook or Sábado Gigante's hook, Don Francisco's hook was for the most part that a lot of people would come over from Latin America and suddenly they had something to relate to, you know, because of the humor was, you know, kind of old school and it is kind of, you know, very familiar and, you know,
yeah,
it definitely does have this family vibe kind of thing going on with the game shows and with all the entertainment. And I think Joel did like a great job at, you know, describing all of that.
And I think there's another thing that is very important to mention here. I mean, I was struck when the news came out of that the show was being canceled a few days ago. The first reaction I saw on Twitter and Facebook, most Latino people I follow and I'm friends with, the first ones to jump out were saying, oh, this is terrible, it's so sad, a part of my life is gone now, a part of my childhood. And I was a bit shocked by that. I thought that these are very educated, simulated people. That I don't know why do they care about this show? It's embarrassing. And I seriously doubt that they watch it now. So Joel's piece kind of explained that to me because it wasn't my immigrant experience.
Right.
I came to the States when I was older, not as a kid.
And knowing Don Francisco.
Yeah, well, that's different also. Mm-hmm. But then a few days later, all this very critical opinion pieces started to come out, like the one that was published in The Guardian and that called, you know, the title is, I'm sure many people who are listening to us may have read it, it's written by Aura Abogado, and the title is Latinos Outgrew Sábado Gigante's Racism and Misogyny Long Before It Ended. So the first reaction was like sadness, and then the second wave of reactions was way more critical, saying, okay, the Latino world has already surpassed what Sábado Gigante stands for.
It reminds me of the Roman Polanski situation. Remember when they brought back all those accusations of him like raping the minor and all this?
Yes.
And people were like, oh my God, how dare they, you know, arrest this like great director. And then you like looked into the details and you're like, oh wait, no, that was really sketchy.
Not even sketchy. He acknowledged that he did.
Yeah. And the victim forgave him and everything. But yeah, it's like sort of, you know, now everyone, you know, with Don Francisco was whatever, you know, be nostalgic and feeling, you know, that they lost this great emblem of Latino culture. But then suddenly you're like, no, wait, it kind of was awful and it's been awful for a while. So.
And some people also remember that he was sued for sexual harassment with one of his models and that he actually settled this out of court.
That's true.
It's a total taboo topic, you know, and both here and in the United States and in Chile, Don Francisco has this reputation for being a strong guy. Nobody wants to mess with him. And I mean, nobody wants to mess with Univision because you may actually eventually want to work for them. And in Chile, he was such a powerful figure. There were a few singers who accused him of like banning them from the show or, you know, they got into public fights with them and then they accused him of like acting like mafia style to like block their careers.
I mean, definitely, you know, for any up-and-coming artist that wants to grow within that medium, you know, you would have to go through Don Francisco at some point. I mean, everybody did it, you know, Ricky Martin, like everyone would stop by that show at some point and do some sort of silly performance, you know, every single Televisa actor, novela actor ever, you know, it was like the one stop where, you know, you were guaranteed this massive audience. And if you get in with Don Francisco, then, you know, you were good to go.
Uh-huh.
I mean, well, didn't like Obama and everyone also do yes. all these, you know?
Yeah, and he was, of course, his influence on pop culture was so, you know, he was parodied by Stephen Colbert and so, you know,
yeah, parody yeah, there was like is the a Simpsons parody as well. Yes.
He's hugely influential. Well, Marcelo, we're getting serious in this podcast. We're getting journalistic and we have a guest. We taped an interview with Laura Martinez. Laura is a friend and a colleague. She's a blogger based in New York, originally from Mexico. She writes Mi Blog Es Tu Blog, her blog. And she has both interviewed Don Francisco and written about Sábado Gigante in positive and also critical terms. And and she's also written about the media industry at Univision many, many times. So here's our phone call with her. Hi, Laura. How are you?
Hi, Jose. Nice talking to you.
Laura, I'm going to ask a stupid question in the famously stupid style of CNN. Sábado Gigante is ending. Is this a good or a bad thing?
It really depends who you ask and the questions. The answers you're going to get are going to be very, very different. If you ask me as a blogger, it's devastating news because Don Francisco was very often source of scorn in my blog, mostly because I would pretty much complain in a funny way, if you will, about its, you know, racy and racist and sexist sketches and things. So if you ask me, I would say it's devastating. But more seriously, I think it's not really a good thing for Univision, and not because it's ending, but per se, but because I think it marks a turning point on a Spanish language network like Univision, which is going to have to look at two things. What are you going to do to replace that show? What are you going to replace it with? And they have to realize if this was a matter of declining audience, which I think it is the case.
Yeah, that's interesting that you mentioned that. I read a few reports that mention how part of the reason behind the show ending now was that the ratings had fallen in a key demographic, young adults. And another reason was that Don Francisco owns the show and he sells it to Univision, so they had to negotiate directly with him. And I think this is an expensive, and maybe it's just not worth it for the network now. That's what I read in between the lines. Do you have any more information on why the show ended now?
Yeah, that is very interesting. I mean, the ratings that I did see, I mean, of course it's still, I mean, today, it's still the most popular show on Saturday night. I mean, don't get me wrong. But when you look at the ratings and the figures, you will look like they're talking about 2 million viewers, right? But this is the Nielsen ratings that are measured as 2 million total viewers, meaning it means two things, that these are people 2 years old and older watching, and you're watching, you can be watching 1 minute or the entire show, the last 3 hours, mind you. But the key demographic, like you mentioned, this is the one that has been declining, and this is the young adults, and this is the one advertisers go after. And I believe that the show, if you look at the demographic changes, and even a language preference changes among young Hispanics, this is a show that is not going to make economic sense very soon.
But why? You know, the few times that I watch Univision, just for informative purposes, in my case, the other offerings of Univision are kind of similar, El Gordo y la Flaca, or even República Deportiva. Like the guy from República Deportiva gets like sort of a doppelganger for Don Francisco, just Argentinian and talking about sports. But, you know, it's not like Univision is canceling this because there's clearly not an editorial turning point here that they're going to create smarter, less sexist television.
Well, that is true, but I mean, there are two things. I once asked this question directly to Mario Kreutzberger, Don Francisco, and I asked him if he was thinking of retiring and when he was planning on retiring. And he told me something it's very interesting now. He told me, I don't want to retire anytime soon. This was 2 years ago. And if I were to retire soon, this will be because I will be retired by the ratings, by declining ratings and declining audience. This by no means, it doesn't mean necessarily that he was ousted or he decided to leave because the audience is declining. But he did tell me that, which is interesting. And also what you're saying, I mean, of course, you have shows like El Gordo y la Flaca or República Deportiva. I mean, they are also a very important part of my blog. When you look at the ambassadors of sports, you know, these ladies pretty much wearing bikinis on Saturday morning television. But it would be very interesting to look at novelas also. You know what Univision is doing now? Claiming that young Hispanics are, like, not watching Spanish language television or even English language television long form. They are launching these like little novela express apps and going and doing like crazy stuff online, apparently in an effort to get these young people that are not watching cable or broadcast television. So I think that, and Univision is not alone in this one, I think networks are pretty much scrambling into what to do with these so-called millennials. I mean, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you have outlets like Manero, like Fusion, that are trying, you know, to reach this young, hip, millennial demographic that apparently moves more comfortably in English. I mean, you and I are speaking in English right now, but are these outlets and are these programs really succeeding? That is also, you know, up in the air. What do you think?
Well, there are a few things I can't tell you right now. We're doing great, Laura. We're doing great. Just one last question, short. You mentioned that you interviewed Don Francisco in front of a live audience a few years ago. Can you remember one thing that caught your attention about him or in dealing with him?
Yeah, the guy is amazing because I had, before we went out on the stage, I was talking to him a little bit. We were kind of prepping some questions. He came across as he's not so much serious, but he's a serious and even shy person. I was really shocked to see him as, you know, a person that wouldn't talk much. He would barely smile. And as soon as we, you know, walked on the stage and he saw the live audience and the there was a camera and there was the lights on him, he transformed. It was an amazing transformation. And I was like, oh my God, I mean, this is not the guy that I was talking to right now backstage. So I think this is going to be personally very interesting for him. I mean, he'll be abandoning a show that he did live for 53 years. And actually, when I interviewed him, he told me something really, really interesting. The show was done live during all of its run, except for one weekend. And this was a weekend in which his mother passed away.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really amazing. I mean, the guy was, this was his life. So, what struck me was how transformed he was in front of the audience and the camera. So it's kind of interesting to see what he's going to do now. I mean, he's not old. He's, 74?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, Laura, thank you so much.
I hope I didn't mumble too much. Thank you, Jose.
Well, Marcelo, I like what Laura said at the end. She was talking about Don Francisco's professionalism. She's critical of him to some extent, but I would be, you know, hypocritical if I didn't recognize that as much, you know, as critical as I am of Don Francisco right now. You know, I do television. I interview people for New York One Noticias. And if I didn't acknowledge that he was my first probably master in, not that I'm good at it, not that I'm a master, but when I don't know, when I'm interviewing someone and I don't know what to say, I swear, I think, what would Don Francisco say here? And I should be thankful for that. The guy is really, really good at, you know, switching between genres of television. Being funny, he could sing, he could dance, he could do a serious interview. Of course, he could do all the other, he could make fun of poor people and be misogynistic and all these things that we hate him for, but he's a professional.
He's a man of many hats, for sure. That is an interesting aspect, actually, now that you bring it up, how he would, you know, switch between his roles of, you know, the interview reporter type, you know, especially with this late night show where he was a lot more serious. And
yes.
Not, you know, it didn't have any sketches, it didn't have any, you know, it was straight up. And he was actually, like, I remember, you know, he used to be, you know, hard on some people occasionally with, you know, with certain subjects. And then, you know, he had this other playful persona where he would go into the audience and then, you know, talk to the older ladies and be like, hey, what do you think about this
yeah.
thing? And, you know, and so, yeah, it was interesting how he juggled his personas. Very skilled, you know, for better or worse. But
and to try to end this on a positive note and not just speak of the bad aspects of Sábado Gigante and Don Francisco, I also interviewed Paz Zárate. Paz is currently an international law lawyer. She lives in London. And she normally speaks on television about very serious international conflicts between countries. But I found out recently, after knowing her for, you know, all these other reasons, that she had been part of El Clan Infantil. And El Clan Infantil was this section that Sábados Gigantes had when I was a kid, in which it was sort of a Mickey Mouse club. So they had all these kids who were very smart. I think there were some competitions between them. But also they danced and sang and had like comedy sketches. And I was, when Paz told me, well, I was part of Clan Infantil, I immediately said, of course, I knew you from somewhere. So Paz has an interesting story of her own personal story with knowing Don Francisco and being in Sábado Gigante. And we spoke to her on the phone because she's in London.
Hello, Paz. How are you?
Hi, Jose. Nice talking to you.
But in light of some recent criticisms that have been published, opinion columns that have criticized Sábado Gigante for being sexist or racist, you have mentioned that what you remember from Sábado Gigante, in plural, in Chile, it was a very different show. Why?
Yes.
And how was it a different show?
Well, I think it's right that there are two programs, and I think there are two characters. There's Sábado Gigante in the U.S. and Sábado Gigante in Chile. And for me, I could not bring myself to watch Sábado Gigante in the U.S. when I lived in the U.S. as an adult, because it did not resemble the Sábado Gigante in Chile that I grew up with. For me, the cultural code of the program had changed completely in order to adapt itself to a new audience. And the humor and everything that I remember from the Sábado Gigantes in the 80s, the program that I was part of as a child, was not there anymore. I could not find any cultural references. And also, as you yourself grow up, you grow more aware that certain things are not right. For example, the treatment of women in the program, that I think is, that's perhaps the best example of something that you wonder if that was ever part of Sábado Gigantes in Chile, and I think it was a lot less. So for me, clearly, there are two programs for two different audiences, and I think the purpose of Sábado Gigantes or Sábado Gigante in the U.S. was to be a common cultural reference for the Latino community, and perhaps even for the Spanish-speaking world, for the people who came into the U.S. not understanding English. But the purpose of Sábado Gigantes in Chile was to bring a different community together at a very difficult time.
It's interesting that you emphasize the community aspect. But I want to go back to what you mentioned. You were part of a segment in the show that I remember very well as a kid growing up in Chile in the 80s. It was called Clan Infantil, and it was like kind of a copycat of the Mickey Mouse Club, sort of. There were like these kids who would dance and act, and they were also kind of witty and precocious, or they would shock Don Francisco with their smart answers. And you were part of
that's it. Right. That's right. I was part of that, of the children's club, and I was the group of the smart kids.
Uh-huh. And how were you selected? Did you apply? Was there a casting? Were you paid for that?
Well, you could apply, but I wouldn't have thought of that because I think my family was not attracted by the program or by the figure of Don Francisco, the host. So so my school sent me, and they were trying to find smart kids for a new season, and in this new season, the very very bright kids will compete against each other in a quiz show meant to last a few months, to answer very difficult questions about a certain topic. And so there was many rounds in which we were selected until finally they decided, yes, you're going to be on the show, and then you will be on the show for a few months, and the questions will get harder, more and more difficult. And there was a final prize in the end for the winner, and that was a trip to Orlando, trip to Miami, with all expenses paid for the winner and his or her family. So that was lucky me. And after that, I was invited to also witness the show in Miami. Then I was invited to be part of the conversation with Don Francisco, a few episodes. And at the end of that year, I got to dance with the whole troupe, all the kids, for the final show of that year. So I also got to do a little bit of dancing and singing with the crew.
And then when you did that trip, you mentioned before that it was right when the show was transitioning from being a Chilean show to an American show taped in Miami, and you saw it had like very humble beginnings. It wasn't this like mega production that it became today.
Yes, that was for me. I mean, I was 11 at the time. I was we thought we would tape a little bit of my antics in Miami and Orlando, so I was invited to visit the show when in its beginning, 1986. And it was quite shocking for me to see that here was the biggest star of Chilean television. There was no one like him. He was the real king. And then in Miami, he was nobody. It was hard even to find people to be in the audience. It was a very, very humble studio. So in the end, we didn't have the means to record what we thought we would record of my trip to Florida. And I could see also, because of the time I spent with Don Francisco, how different he was, the man on TV and the man when he was not taping, he was not recording, he was a completely different man.
What kind of a man was he when he was not recording?
I think anyone who knows Don Francisco a little, and I knew him a little then, will tell you that there's two people. There's the man with the camera in front of him, he will light up, he will be so energetic, he will always find something to laugh about, always making jokes. And then when everything is switched off and in his Mario Kreuzberger, he's a very silent character, a very silent type. And I remember asking the producers, is he upset with us? Why? Because we were kids. Why wouldn't he talk to us now when we are not on air? And they said, that's him. He's taciturn. He's silent. And don't worry. He's not that he suddenly hates you. But this is, he's always thinking and he needs silence to think. And this is why he's not talking to you guys when we are not on air. So don't you worry. There are two people, very distinct, but it's fine. So yes, we were given a warning about the double personality.
That's very interesting. Paz, thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome, Jose. Nice talking to you.
Well, and I think we're going to wrap it up, Marcelo. This was the fourth episode of the Manera Pop podcast. Anything else you want to say?
We won't miss you, Don Francisco, but you know, we acknowledge your impact.
Yes.
You've had on all of our lives.
Uh-huh.
And
it's like that, you know, if you had like a weird ankle in your life.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
That did like
the embarrassing good ankle.
Bad stuff, and then he dies and you... I feel a bit bittersweet about it.
I do want to send a shout out to El Chacal, the original Chacal.
De la Trompeta,
and,
yeah.
Yeah, the guy that was fired and had that awesome, there's that interview, you can see it on YouTube, of him talking about, you know, his perspective on, and I was really sad, you know, when he got fired, and it was very impersonal too, because he'd known Don Francisco forever. And Don Francisco was basically just like, oh, by the way, you're fired, kind of. And, but yes, you know, let's take a moment for El Chacal. You know, wanna
okay, well, of course, you can find us on manero.com. You can write us to manero@manero.com. And you can find this podcast on Blog Talk Radio and the iTunes Store. Goodbye.